Welcome, everyone. It's good to be here with you. Today is November 1st, and today's podcast is actually the last one for October. And I'm posting it today for a couple of reasons. And one being, I just got so busy yesterday getting ready for trick-or-treaters and, you know, baking and cooking in the kitchen. And it was a lovely day. It was a beautiful day in terms of the weather. And I was just busy doing all these happy things. I love this time of year so much. And my daughter was home in the afternoon, and she is 17. And she was like, "Mom, let's watch Harry Potter tonight after, you know, things get quiet and the trick-or-treaters go home." And we did that. We kind of lit candles and piled on the couch with our dog and the cat and just enjoyed this magical dip back into the very first Harry Potter, which I definitely associate with my children's little ages because, A, I first read that series for myself and enjoyed it immensely. And then when my son was old enough, I started reading that to him every night, and we made our way through all the books. And then Jordy, my daughter, last night said she still remembers the dress she was wearing when we finally decided she was big enough for me to start in on the series with her. And it was a nightly ritual, and those are just precious, precious times for me. And it was beautiful to watch that first film again, and I'm sure we'll be moving through the series again as well, the other episodes. But that's such a magical time in my children's young life, and it was lovely to revisit that. So with all these happy celebrations, I had the podcast ready to go in terms of the content, and I thought, oh, I'll be able to steal an hour and get this recorded, and it just didn't happen. But I didn't want to rush it. And here we are just one day later. And if you look at the calendar, you know, part of my endeavor with the podcast is when you're aligning with seasonal rhythms, things don't happen in an hour or on a day. It's a gradual shifting. And we're definitely still in the time of the dead. So yesterday was Halloween. Today is actually the Mexican tradition and celebration of Day of the Dead. So we're just in that time right now. And I didn't want to rush it, as I said. And part of seasonal rhythms is just allowing the time to shift as it shifts and not rushing into it and not just saying, oh, I've turned the page on the calendar, so therefore everything's tidy and put away. That's not how it works in nature. And there's still a tumble of leaves in my neck of the woods, just cascading down. It was fun to take my dog out this morning after all the trick-or-treaters had been out and about. And it was like this monster flotsam and jetsam scattered about the neighborhood. It was kind of this ghoulish confetti. I saw an elf ear, and I saw, you know, somebody had lost from their costume, and I saw a little plastic knife with fake blood on it, and I saw silver streamers and the occasional candy wrapper, and it just was fun. And even in the morning after the big event, it just felt as though people had delighted in being together and in enjoying the night and enjoying the weather and enjoying each other and enjoying being spooky. And that was just lovely to be a part of. So I hope you're well, and we're going to continue today. I'll give you a few housekeeping notes here. We're going to continue today a bit in our heroine's journey conversation. We just started to talk about that last time, and we noted how it differs from the hero's journey. And then we just started to go into Anana's story. And then I mentioned last time that I thought I might be doing an interview. I am still doing an interview. We had to postpone it a few weeks. So that will come. I have a new and wonderful friend in my life, and I will be sharing a book that she has written and some of her experiences, and I'll get all to that later. But that is still gathering. So we just returned a bit now to the heroine's journey, a deeper dive into that material because it's so juicy for me. And it's where I find myself right now. And it's such a fantastic time of year to be thinking about this material because it's very seasonally appropriate if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. So that is something we're returning to today. And I had mentioned last time that podcast Skeleton Keys that I had run across that I so enjoy and recommend, they had mentioned that a great series that is illustrative of the heroine's journey is The Watchmen, which I think is on HBO Max, and it debuted maybe 2 years ago. So you can see all the episodes and enjoy them. And I started that because I was really curious. I loved this idea of this strong feminine lead and seeing what that had to say. And I can tell it's amazingly well done. And Regina King is a wonderful actress. I enjoy her so much. It's too violent for me. And that is not to dissuade you. I just am really big with the images I have in my head, and it's pretty violent. And so I chose not to continue, but I believe the folks over at Skeleton Keys when they say it's fantastic. The reviews I've read say it's fantastic and, you know, definitely is going to be a classic in the genre. And I applaud all of that. So I'm just offering that if you're really sensitive to images, there's a lot of violence, and that's just kind of not where I want to go. I want to experience all the ways I can become familiar with the heroine's journey, maybe without all the violent images. And, you know, I'm not being all Pollyanna about that. It's just a choice on my part. So please enjoy that if that's fine for you or whatever. But I just wanted to put a pin in that. And then also, I don't believe in chance. This obviously was a synchronicity. I did, though, happen upon, quote unquote, a lovely series called The Essex Serpent. And I had read that book by Sarah Perry maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it was beautifully done, and I enjoyed the book. And here it had just been released a few months ago, and Claire Danes and Tom Hiddleston star in the main roles. And it is in Victorian London and Essex, and it is beautifully done. It is such a lush, character-driven, haunting, gorgeous production, and in my estimation is also a heroine's journey. So if Watchmen is not something that's resonating for you, even though I know it's fantastic, The Essex Serpent might be something to dip into. Again, if you're wanting to enjoy some visual storytelling imagery to accompany our heroine's journey discussion. I loved it. I didn't want it to end. So that is always a great recommendation, is if you didn't want the last episode to finish, because it's so beautifully done. So today we are in the Beaver Moon phase and cycles. And I'd like to share the new moon and the waxing moon. And indeed, the Beaver Moon will be full on November 8th, which is Election Day in the U.S. and all kinds of momentous things happening and gathering here over the next week. So let's set the stage today as I share some poetry about the Beaver Moon. New Moon. It can be a difficult time, the in-between time. Death has washed over us fully. We may be struggling with this fact, or not. But nevertheless, it is our season. This is the beaver moon. The days are dark and the nights are long. We seek light, fire, and warmth, sustenance, and blessed orientation in the swallowing silence. But important muscles are tested in this time. The muscles of trust and knowing, the strengthening of soul in the watery rays of slanting sunlight. We can merely survive this shadowy hour, or we can relate to the mighty gods attending. And indeed, there are mighty gods in our midst at this time. Inanna, Persephone, Hades, Hecate. There is so much wisdom to psychologically engage with and hold and tend to. In the last week, I was blessed in the most spontaneous way. I had been out walking again with my dog, which is such a regular thing, a daily thing for me. And I came back and I have a tattoo, and it's a very small cobra on my left forearm. And that has kundalini and spiritual and soulful significance to me. It's very simple, but it's about that rising authenticity in myself. And so it's a reminder there for me. And as I've said to you over the past several episodes, I feel very much in the underworld right now, not because I'm in a depression or anything of that nature, but I'm just really tilling the deep, deep soils right now. So the Persephone work, the Inanna stories are very alive for me right now. And when I came back from my walk just a few days ago, there was this incredible snakeskin right at the edge of our property. And it's so silvery and lovely. And I'm looking at it right here in the podcast studio, right as I'm speaking to you, and it's curled up around some old rose petals that I had in a jar. And it's just a small snake skin, but I just took it as such an incredible symbol of joy and rebirth. And the snake skin is in really great condition, and you can even see one of the eye holes. It's just fantastic. And, you know, snakes aren't something that I'm, you know, readily holding or anything like that, in terms of, you know, actually handling them in the wild or anything. But this snake skin was something I could do. I have made progress with sort of the instinctual fear around snakes. But symbolically, they're so important to me and they're very powerful. So here was this lovely sort of love note from the underworld to me. And I took it as that. And I'm claiming that. So here's the waxing moon. I invoke the gods. I am lost. I sense you all around me, but I cannot see. I invoke fire, the slow burning kind. I am in the season and space of darkness, as I should be. Yet boldly I implore, send me a spark that I might coax and tend. I invoke mercy. You already know what I need, the unsayable thing. I invoke rest, the permission to feed my imagination again. I invoke peace in this new land, in this instinctual time. I invoke the gods of things unraveling. There are tender places still from having lost so much long ago in another life. Internal log jams, snagging flotsam I no longer need. So help me, gods of things unraveling, to to rebuild the heartbreak structures. I invoke the gods. So how are you? How is your death time of year progressing? Are these themes and motifs poignant for you right now? Are you able to be patient and still as much as possible while it does the deep, dark work? I think so often in my own life, so much is happening when it doesn't seem like it is. And I'm learning to lean into that more and to trust it more. So just by way of revisiting some of the work that we talked about last week, and remember, Maureen Murdoch is one of the great contributors to the heroine's journey. Several people are writing about it, but she is definitely credited with writing about it early on. And she, of course, was in conversation with Joseph Campbell. So I highly value her perspective on it. And just to summarize the points again that she's talking about in her story arc of the feminine's journey, we start with the heroine separating from the feminine and like not liking it in the beginning. Identifying with the masculine and gathering of those allies. And we talked a bit about how so many women, particularly at this moment in time, in recent decades where women are working inside and outside of the home, that this is sort of a cultural moment where so many women are having to learn how to navigate the masculine world. Then we have the roads of trials and meeting dragons and ogres, all of the challenges there. And initially experiencing a boon of success. And I see this again and again, that so many women determine to forge ahead, learn the rules of how this is all supposed to work, and there is an initial success externally. And then there's sort of a crash, and the heroine is awakening to feelings of spiritual aridity and death. And that's when we go into the underworld. That's when we go into this descent and this initiation to the goddess. And that's where we're going to spend some time today and even do sort of a thought meditative exercise regarding that. But then the heroine's arc moves on from that space. And we'll talk about that more in the days and weeks ahead. But there is the heroine urgently yearning to reconnect with the feminine, sort of newly again. Maybe not what she learned from her mother or from society in the beginning that she pushed away, but like a new revitalized feminine. So she's healing that split. And then she's healing the wounded masculine within herself, not focusing on it in an external way, but defining what the masculine ideal is for her internally, as well as the feminine internally. And then there's this joyous integration of the masculine and the feminine, and then you've really got something in terms of an amazing life internally and externally. I really resonate with these marks, these little signposts along the way. They seem to really echo my experience right now. And so I'm curious how this is all sitting with you. But returning to Inanna's story, because we're going to spend a little time in the underworld today. Remember, she is the queen of heaven, and she gets word that her sister Ereshkigal's husband has died, and so she is going to go to the underworld where Ereshkigal presides as the queen of death, and she's going to go support her sister and be there for the funeral of her brother-in-law. So right away, that seems a little weird to me and to those who study this story. It's like, what else is calling her there? You know, she's a queen in her own domain. And I think we return to that motif of something in her knows she needs to go here. So maybe it's under the pretense of being there for her sister and the brother-in-law because he has died. But it seems much larger than that because you just don't go to the underworld, you know, willy-nilly. It's a major and momentous shift and calling. And so one of the researchers, I've just been reading all kinds of input all over the place. And again, I'm posting some of these sources in the bookshop if you're interested in reading some about it. But several of the authors have talked about sort of this idea that there is the concept intellectually of going to attend a death. And then there is the reality of being in the process of death yourself. Because Inanna sort of has this intellectual, yes, I will go be part of a death process, but there's a removal sort of in the I'm not experiencing it myself. But yet when she gets into the underworld, the death she attends is her own. The shadow she meets is herself. And sometimes people and those who study the story liken the Ereshkigal sister as her shadow self. And it's about the meeting and the ferocity between the Inanna self and the Ereshkigal self and how they sort of square off with each other and have to merge. And there's this incredible part of the story, which we will talk about today, and that is as Inanna enters the underworld, you know, it's not just dropping in to, you know, bring a bouquet of flowers. She is stripped bare through a series of going through seven gates, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But while in the underworld, and after going through that really humbling, even humiliating, egoic stripping away of her identities, Ereshkigal, the sister, who is fierce, who is mourning her own husband's death, is somehow in labor pain. While all this is happening, while Inanna is dying, being stripped bare, is being hung on a meat hook by the judges of the underworld. And we'll get to that part of the story at a later point. But while she is dying, Ereshkigal is giving birth, is in labor pains. So here's the collision of all of these really profound psychic moments, and they're all happening in the underworld. So this story really, as a very ancient precursor to the Persephone myth, you know, they have so much in common, but some really distinct pieces in and of themselves, unique to their own versions of the story. So today I want to talk about these seven gates that Inanna must go through. And a lot of the research I did over the last week, there's several folks that link the chakras to these seven gates. And if you're unfamiliar with what chakras are, it goes back to the Vedic Hindu traditions, and it's a belief that there are energy centers that sort of go up the spine of the human body. And chakra actually is Sanskrit for wheel. And so there are these primarily seven centers, although I know there are more chakras than that, but there are seven that start at the base of the spine and go up through the top of the crown of the head. And you probably, if you're new to this thought, you may have run across this in yoga or in meditation. And whether chakras are your thing or not, that's okay. They don't have to be. but they each correspond to a certain area of life and a certain area of the body. So it is really helpful to think of these seven gates because you sort of get all of the areas of the inner and outer world covered, if you will. So that's why this is an attractive idea to me to link these together. So that's what we're going to do today. And again, it doesn't matter if you're into the idea of chakras or not, but we're going to cover those systems because it links to internal and external parts of the journey that Inanna is being stripped of. And I think that's enormously helpful. So as Inanna goes through the first of the seven gates, I'm just going to read down the list of things that she ultimately must part with, increasingly so as she moves through these gates to get to the inner sanctum where there is the dead brother-in-law and where she meets Ereshkigal, her sister, who is in birth pains. Okay, so Inanna going into this is quite heavily dressed for the occasion. You know, she's decked out. She's a goddess. And I would offer not very humble about what she's going to do. And that rings true for me because I love depth psychology. I love Jungian and archetypal perspectives. I love all that. Went to grad school for all of that. Love the material, love the reading of it, love talking about it. And that's a really important aspect of it. I have a passion for it, but it's very different to experience it, to go into the underworld, to let these identities be stripped away. Those are two different things. And there is a great humility that accompanies the actual underworld experience. And so I get that. So here Inanna's going in, maybe somewhat glibly, like I can handle this. And she goes with her crown, small lapis beads, and then a two-strained lapis set of beads, a breastplate, a gold ring from her wrist, more lapis in the form of a measuring rod, almost like for justice, and then a royal robe. So this is how she's decked out. And this really lines up, not only in terms of color, but in a hierarchical sense with the chakras. Because let me just give you a little quick primer on the chakras if you're unfamiliar. They start at the root, going up the spine. And think of the colors of the rainbow: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. So your root chakra, which is at the base of your spine, is red, and it has to do with being grounded. It has to do with security and just the nitty-gritty survival instincts, internal and external. Moving up, then you meet the orange center or wheel, and that is the sacral. So that has to do with sexuality, sensuality, creativity, but that's below the navel. Then you move up into the yellow region, that is solar plexus. That is when the energy of your life is starting to move out into the world. You have the basic needs met and you can start to express yourself externally. There is success, self-mastery there in terms of feeling confident about your way in the world. Then you're moving up to the heart. That's about bonding and connection and relationship. That's green center. Moving on up into the throat, that's the blue area. That's our ability to have a voice, to live authentically in the spoken and unspoken ways of our lives. Moving up then into sort of the third eye area, the mid-forehead, moving into the violet area, you know, and that's the third eye. That's where we're getting into the pineal imaginal space. And we've talked so much about that power in the course of our podcasts. And then the crown. And that's definitely your linked to divinity and the higher self, the authentic self. So it sort of moves from the very earthy part to the very spiritual part, moving up. And so I find it amazing because we're in the underworld. It's sort of the reverse order of that. And the first thing that Inanna has to offer up at a gate is the crown. She's got to let that go. And then it moves into the small lapis beads, and that would be that third eye area. That's that color. That's a synchronicity there with the color. She has to let those go. And then down into the throat, again, those bluish colors, the second strand of the lapis beads, down into the breastplate, the heart, down into the gold area where there's a gold ring from her wrist, and then the lapis measuring rod, and then the royal robe itself, meaning she is stripped bare. That, in my estimation, lines up very well with just pure fundamental survival. Like, she's completely bare. She's naked now. This is very much in an instinctual, I am laid bare place. It's not about just setting your crown down. It's like, I have no clothes. So I find this order of moving up and down these wheels and these energy systems, and, you know, the densely physical to the spiritual back down to the densely physical. That I find that really fascinating. And so what I would like to do today is give some meaning to what these symbols might be talking about. And that is to start with the concepts that we tend to associate with each of these areas. And in my experience, it has been enormously helpful when I don't know what to do, to just simply ask a good question of the psyche. So much happens when you do that. When you come into a stillness and just ask a really good question of the psyche, whether that's in meditation or right before you're going to bed, that activates the conversation, and in my experience, quickens the conversation, and the psyche starts speaking in all the ways that it does through your life, through your experiences, through synchronicities, helping you live the answers to those questions. So I would like to do this thought exercise with you as we go through these gates with Inanna. And for each of the gates, I want to offer up a question and then follow that with a beautiful imaginal desire. So it's a two-part journey for us today. We're going to ask a question about a block we may have, something we may need to let go, something we have to offer up at the gate. But then the second part is, what in our wildest dreams would we like in the affirmative to replace what we have offered up? Do we have the agency and the sovereignty to bring into the imaginal space a desire that we would like in that place of what we have offered up? Why are we doing it this way? Okay, first we have to strip down, let go of these old ideas, let go of these old mind patterns, and that's what we'll be doing. That's what Inanna is doing, symbolically speaking. But it is also essential to have a vision of what is authentic for you. What is the joy of your life? How would you like to write the story? So the means by which that will happen are not up to us. We'll be prompted, we'll be led to take action internally or externally to be a part of the harmonious arrival of what we desire. But we have to have a vision of what is really important to us, what is our heart's desire, and have a clear image of that in the imaginal space. So let me give you an example here. We're going to start with the crown because that's where Inanna started. She had to offer up her crown at the first gate. And so let's link that to this idea of spirituality. So what I would like you to consider is what spiritual concept might be getting in your way right now. That could be a lot of different things. Maybe it's a religion that you grew up with that is not speaking to you anymore. Maybe it's an identity of having lived in a codependent relationship with somebody who has addiction issues, and you would like to let that identity go. It could be a variety of things. So there's going to be that aspect of the crown of where you're letting a spiritual idea, a lofty idea go, an identity go. And then we want to bring into clarity, and it might not all happen in the space of this podcast, but just a thought exercise to be with over the next days and weeks. But part two of this is then what would I love to be possible? Would I love a spirituality that is rooted in the goddess? Maybe that's new for you. Would I love a spirituality that is about creativity and expressing myself on a canvas? Would I love to start writing and reading poetry as a way of connecting with spiritual themes? Allow yourself to invent an alternative that really captures your imagination and makes your heart like leap in joy as something to replace the thing we're letting go. So we're going to do this letting go of an old idea, welcoming a new image for each of these gates. That's what our task is today. Okay? So, in this space right now, imagine a spiritual idea, a lofty idea that you would like to set aside. Imagine taking the crown off and setting that idea aside. And what would you love? What would make your heart leap up in joy? To exist in your life in place of that old idea that you're ready to let go. And if possible, call in an image. Call in an image that represents the new thing that you would like to create a home for. That could be a visual image. It could be a sound. It could be a feeling. It could be a piece of music. But this first category, again, is talking about our spirituality, our connection to our higher self, ideas around that. And again, if you don't know, you just ask the question. You just ask the question of the psyche and be willing to work with this thought and meditative exercise while it unfolds. So moving down now into the third eye area, sort of the area at your brows, Inanna was asked to part with a small chain of lapis beads. So we are calling into question now, what ideas around imagination are old and need to go? Do we think that our imagination isn't actually a center of creation? We just think that's an idea. Have we never thought of the imagination that way, as actually a seat of power in our psychic reality. What would you like to take that place? Is it a confidence in your ability to imagine the dreams of your life coming into reality? What image or symbol could replace the lapis beads that we need to let go? Moving down into the throat area, Inanna was asked to part with a two-stranded lapis bead set. She takes that off. What aspect of your ability to communicate, to live from a space of clarity around communication internally and externally, having a voice? Where do you have a voice? Where do you not have a voice? Where in your life are you ready to part with something regarding voice? And what in your wildest dream, in your wildest imagination, would be a miraculous arrival of a new way of relating to that? What if you never feared speaking to your partner again? What if you never feared speaking in public again? What if you knew that your life was very much in alignment with who you know yourself to be at your core? These are all possibilities that could arise from a death and rebirth regarding this area of your life. Moving down into the chest, Inanna had to offer up a breastplate. What about bonding, love, the heart? Are you ready to let go? Were you smothered in some way as a child? Did you caretake for others and not get to just sort of tend to what mattered to your own heart? Are you in deep connection with somebody, and is that a moving and joyful experience, or is there trouble there? Is there unrest there? Where is that unrest actually coming from? Can we let go of the idea that it's not about the other at its core? It's about us relating to us. And so what, in your wildest dream, in your wildest imagination, in your most miraculous arrival, is an image that could take the place of what you're ready to give up regarding the heart, regarding bonding, regarding true feeling, not just emotion? I really make a distinction between feeling and emotion. Emotion, the way I define it, often has a thought associated with it, and those come and go. And they can be blocks. We can hold on too tightly to them. They can become identities that we don't need. Feeling is just part of being human, and we have to experience that and then sort of let it move through us and shake it off like a duck shakes off water. Feeling is that ability to be in our human and divine selves, and feel all that that moves and requires through us. Emotion is more getting stuck with an idea or a thought that is limiting in some way. So we want to feel, we want to connect, we want to be very skillful around emotion. Moving down into the solar plexus area, what aspect of your delivery of yourself into the external world are you ready to give up? Are you overworked? Are you in a career that is not for you? Are you lacking confidence in certain areas of your life? And this is sort of the esteem center, where you feel confident to sort of navigate the external space. And what image could replace what we need to give up here? So Inanna is parting with a gold ring from her wrist. She's offering that up. And what image could replace that? Where you're in work that absolutely brings you joy, where you're able to talk to others or dance or be in some kind of expression that others can see and where you enjoy your confidence. What might that look like? Moving down into the next gate, Inanna is asked to part with a lapis measuring rod. We're now at the sacral center. This has to do with our sexuality, our sensuality, our creativity. This has to do with worth, not just esteem about what you can do externally, but now we're moving down into worth. Worth issues themselves. Is there any unrest in these areas? What can we give up? What measuring rod do we think we're meeting or not meeting? How would we like to imagine expressing clarity and joy and juice in this area? What might an amazing image be to replace what we can let go here? And finally, Inanna is asked to strip bare. She drops her royal robes. We are to the root chakra center of absolute security, survival, resources, the ability to take care of ourselves. How are we defining that? Are you defining that because of money? What is your home situation like? Are you at home? Do you have a place to call home? What makes you feel secure? Is that really your security? Or is it coming from someplace else? This is getting down to the nitty-gritty of our fears. And what beautiful and powerful image can take the place of this center if it's out of balance? About how we actually source and resource ourselves. What clarity can we have around that? There's a beautiful Rilke quote that I would like to share with you. It found me just 2 days ago, so I knew it was very appropriate for what we were talking about today. He says, "The work of the eyes is done. Go now and do the heart work on the images imprisoned within you." I'll read that again. The work of the eyes is done. Go now and do the heart work on the images imprisoned within you. For me, that is saying, turn your gaze from the external. The work of your eyes is done. This is now about setting these new images free within you. You're stripping down through these gates. What would we like to release from imprisonment? We need to come into clarity around that. And then the means by which that happens and comes to fruition is part of the journey and will be unique in its unfolding for each of us. Our job is to let go and to get clear. To let go and to get clear. To let go and to get clear. And then, as we've said so many times, be in joy, be in surrender. And then listen to life as we live the answers, as those answers find a way to flow through our experience. So, in the days ahead, in the death time of year, where we're waiting for the light to return deep into December, let's just let this underworld do its thing. Let's just allow it to do its work. Allow old ideas and hindering patterns to drop away. And incubate these beautiful images of what might take the place of that. Remember that Ereshkigal is actually about to give birth, meeting the shadow in the deep, deep underworld space is about to happen. And a rebirth of Inanna is imminent. And we will get more to that part of the story as we proceed through the heroine's journey. But for now, spend some time here if that feels appropriate. I wish you beautiful walks, beautiful time in stillness, in whatever season is unfolding for you. And until next time, take good care. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.